Barry for his courage in releasing the New Zealand data, government data, data that all governments hold, and that could all be released. If the vaccines are safe and effective, then release the record level data for every country, and let's demonstrate that. The fact is that they will not release that data because the data would be damning. And also, there must be many more people in many different countries who are privy to the information that Barry was privy to and he released and did the right thing. And I've encouraged them to come forward as well and do what is the right thing for them to do, the right thing for their families and the right thing for wider society. Winston Churchill said once that the truth, you can criticise it, you can ridicule it, but ultimately it's always there, it is the truth. There is nothing going to come out in the science that's going to say the vaccines are safe and effective after all. The evidence is only ever moving one way, and there's more than enough evidence out there now for any who wish to see.
Andrew Bridgen and Steve Kirsch, welcome to you both. Andrew, we've just come out of that piece from Parliament in December last year, just after we dropped Barry Young's whistleblowing data. And I can tell you both, you have both done a huge service for New Zealand. Many Kiwis who were feeling so demoralised and hopeless about the lies from our government have got a real momentum thanks to both of you fighting for us Kiwis offshore. Of course, where New Zealand goes, or in your case, Andrew, where the UK goes, so we all go. If we can win our fight here, Steve, you in America, and Andrew, your fight that you're currently in with Matt Hancock, the rest of the dominoes will crumble. So tell us about, Andrew, what is happening with Matt Hancock at the moment? You've just had a good win in the courts.
Yeah, well, this is a long-running defamation case. As your viewers might remember, I was expelled from the Conservative Party on the spurious grounds of anti-Semitism for comparing, saying that the rollout, as a leading world-leading cardiologist told me, the rollout of the experimental vaccine is the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust. Well, the Conservative Party really wanted to silence me. They didn't want me speaking out over the safety and efficacy of the vaccines. They used that as an excuse. Hancock and the Prime Minister Sunak engineered a Prime Minister's question where they reiterated that in the chamber on the same day, but never named me. Unluckily for Hancock, because statements in the chamber do have privilege, you can't be prosecuted. Unfortunately, Hancock then couldn't resist tweeting out afterwards, and the tweet's not covered by privilege. So I'm taking him for defamation. He refuses to put in, or he hasn't put in, a defence. I believe that's because he actually hasn't got one. So he is desperately trying to get the case stopped on points. He asked for an extra 4 weeks earlier in the year to prepare his defence, which I gave him generously. I had found out that his lead counsel...
You shouldn't have given it to him, Andrew. What has he done for you lately?
Remember that he would have gone to court. The judges are also lawyers. The whole legal system likes making money out of cases, and time's money. I've never known a court that I've been in where extra time has not been awarded. So I didn't want a cost order against me. But also I found out, he didn't tell me, but I found out, Steve, that his lead counsel had died suddenly. So he would have said that as an excuse in court anyway, and would no doubt have got the extra time. But on the last day of his extra 4 weeks to mount and to create his defence and submit it to court, instead of doing that, he put in for a strikeout application to get my case thrown out. So that's an extra hearing. We had that a few weeks ago in front of Judge Steyn in the Royal Courts of Justice, a half-day hearing, the combined costs of which were, I think, £87,000 for half a day. And although Matt Hancock failed in his attempt to strike out my application and stop it there, the judge did find that my pleadings of my previous lawyers were in some ways defective and they've got to be amended. But then when it came to costs, we didn't even have a cost hearing. She decided it on paper. To be honest, my barrister is pretty damn good, my advocate. I think they didn't really want to see him performing again after the original hearing. And it was decided on paper that I'd got to pay 90% of Hancock's side's cost for the application that had failed. And I was only given 6 days to pay over a bank holiday weekend. So I've set up the crowdfunder and done a video, and the public have been very, very generous. I'm very hopeful. I'm pretty very hopeful that we'll be able to make the costs award on Wednesday. And the case will continue. And also, as I've hinted in the video that I've produced, in the UK, you have the ability, under our legal system, for private citizens, anyone can bring a private criminal prosecution. And I think that Rishi Sunak and Matt Hancock and others have broken the criminal law. And my barristers, he's got the guts to do it. And so have I.
Steve, what's your reaction hearing that?
Well, I'm not surprised about anything that I've heard. I mean, I guess I am, a bit surprised. I thought the legal system was more honest in the UK than it was in the US. But it's like we have equal trouble with the justice system. But I'm very happy to see that Andrew is getting his day in court.
And that's what great. About the private prosecution? Is that possible in the States as well? That's a quirk of English law.
You can't do it in for criminal stuff in the US.
No. So that it's really worth getting behind, Andrew. I think we'll cut away right now to your Easter message, Andrew, and have a look at that.
Hello, my friends, and happy Easter to you all. I'm speaking to you from one of the highest points in the Chiltern Hills. Down there is Chequers, where two very wealthy people who refuse to say whether they have profited from investments in the manufacture of vaccines are no doubt enjoying a very pleasant Easter with their family. Over the other side of this hill, Scarred Beauty tells another tale of corporate grift. Phase one of HS2 is limping towards Birmingham. The euthanasia of the project north of Birmingham couldn't come soon enough. But that's another story though. At the brow of this hill, standing proud over the Vale of Aylesbury, is one of Britain's oldest war memorials of the modern era. It's a monument to the fallen in the Second Boer War. Whatever you think about interventionist conflicts in other people's countries, and I do not think much, this tower commemorates not victory, but the sacrifice of those who died. It is sacrifice I want to talk about with you today. I understand the sacrifice it takes to stake real money, whatever the amount, on a principle. My libel action against Matt Hancock would not be possible without a sacrifice from many of you. As you may know, my previous legal team drafted a pleading which the court found to be defective. That has led to an order for costs that must be paid this week, despite me winning the case and stopping Matt Hancock from striking out my petition. I have new lawyers now, and there'll be no more defective pleadings. And we will try to recover the costs of the defective pleadings from the lawyers responsible. But that process will take time. In the meantime, though, I must ask for further sacrifices from my supporters, because if these costs are not met this week, by Wednesday afternoon, this whole campaign and this whole legal action could end. Mr. Hancock has yet to state his defence to my charge of defamation, even though he's had many opportunities to do so, and his application to have my claim struck out has failed. If, like me, you wish to see what he will say when he's forced to stop taking unattractive procedural points and address the substance of the claim against him, then please make a donation to the crowd fund, however large or small. And know this, this civil action for libel is only the beginning. I've instructed my legal team to start looking at whether I can bring a private prosecution to hold Mr. Hancock and Mr. Sunak to account under the criminal law for what happened on the 11th of January, 2023. That's all for the longer term, but first we must meet the costs arising from the defective pleading. So I say again, if it is within your power to make this sacrifice, please donate whatever you can via the link in the body of this post. Have a very good Easter, and thank you very much for listening to me.
People from around the world, Andrew Bridgen, will want to support you. There are many, many fans of yours in New Zealand, I can tell you, and we need you to win this. Steve, would you be able to put this out in your vast network across America on now X? You've had a tremendous victory in the last few weeks with your exemplary interview with Tucker. Were you happy with it?
Yeah, no, I was thrilled.
I think it's a thrill that Tucker is now realizing, not only is he talking about I made a mistake with Iraq, he's also realizing there's been a huge mistake made with the jabs. There is a slow awakening, isn't there, Steve, over in America? Do you think it's starting to get momentum?
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. There's a lot of momentum here, and people are waking up. People are seeing it in their own family, or they're seeing it in their friends.
I want to come back to your latest X posts on myocarditis towards the end of this interview, but return to you, Andrew, with this case. Now, there were a few things that Hancock said outside the chamber that were not protected, including anti-Semitic, that you were anti-Semitic, clearly, patently rubbish. There is an Antipodean link with that. Avi Yemeni of Rebel News is over in Australia. He's a very strong supporter of Israel. And he said, I am so sick of the anti-Semitic argument being used around the world to silence free speech. And clearly, you are not anti-Semitic or any of the other or any of the other things.
Liz, it's quite interesting that today I've actually just received an invite to go and speak in the Knesset to their health committee on the WHO treaty. Hancock also said I was anti-scientific. Well, I mean, he's got a degree in PPE, which I think is politics, philosophy, and economics from Oxford, not science. I'm the one with the science degree from Nottingham University. And he also said I was anti-vax. Well, I took two AstraZeneca jabs, and they really badly affected me. So I don't know how they can call me anti-science or anti-vax or anti-Semitic. It was just a smear. And smears used to silence, especially members of parliament, who've got a duty to stand up and represent their constituents and the wider public's concerns and hold the government to account, that just can't be allowed to happen in any democracy, and I'm not going to let it happen. And it would appear from the support I'm getting from the public, they're not going to let it happen either.
If you had an opportunity to trade your lawsuit for a publicly broadcast debate that's taped live, would you swap?
I think I would. I think I probably would, but it'd have to go out on all channels at a reasonable time, and it would have to be a fair debate where we could bring in our experts on both sides. I actually asked the Oxford Union, where I've spoken on a number of occasions on various debates. I said to them, let's have a debate in the Oxford Union. The motion can be that the vaccines are safe and effective. You can get Hancock and he can bring his experts in to promote that argument, and I'll bring mine on the other side, and let's see who wins the argument. But the Oxford Union didn't fancy that.
On what grounds? On what grounds? That's a perfect debating topic. What did
they get? And I have been invited to go and speak at the next month. Next month at the Cambridge Union for the first time. But it's some banal motion about comparatively keeping politics out of sport when we should be debating the safety and efficacy of the vaccines. But of course, that's the elephant in the room that nobody wants to address.
It was the Oxford Union debate that enabled David Longy, our Prime Minister in the 80s, to say we will make a stand to be an anti-nuclear armed subs and ships. We'll be anti-nuclear in New Zealand. And that went right around the world. And that policy is still in place, much to the annoyance, I believe, of the nuclear cabal. That Oxford Union debate would be an extraordinary chance. But, Andrew, just getting back to your injury, I want to talk about that. I'm aware that you are potentially on lifelong medication for that, aren't you?
I've certainly still got a lot of effects from it. And not just me. These will never be on yellow cards, but so many of my friends who are outside politics who've taken the vaccines in good faith, you know, we're all suffering. Our immune systems are damaged. At 58, you know, you just don't, you know, develop hay fever, a horrendous hay fever, and so many allergies. I've got food allergies now I've never had all my life. And I speak to my friends, you know, I came out in hives for 7 months for the first time in my life after the vaccines. That's, again, your immune system can't cope. And I've got friends who used to have a little bit of eczema in their armpit in the summer, maybe. They're covered in it now. Psoriasis all over their body. We've all got the same stories. The evidence is so compelling.
And yet?
and yet?
The truth will not be, you know, it's like lung cancer and smoking. The odds ratio on lung cancer and smoking connecting the two was over 10, which means that there's no doubt that smoking causes lung cancer. And yet it took, 40 years for the medical community to figure this out? They could have done a survey of people, and it would have taken 24 hours, and they could have figured that out. And it took.
Well, I rang six of my friends, and five of them told me exactly the same story. I was interviewed for a 2-hour talk documentary before Christmas, and that came out during the conversations. And at the end, the cameraman came to me and said, "I wondered why I got hay fever and had hives after the same jabs that you had."
A lot of coincidences happening.
He had exactly the same jabs, and his symptoms were exactly the same as I just described to the camera that he was filming me.
You know, if they gave the jabs and 10% of all the people that they gave the jabs to died within an hour of the jab, it would still take them 40 years to make the connection. They would say, correlation isn't causation for 40 years.
the worst one with Barry Young's data is they say, but Liz, what were the ages? Now, we have a piece we're going to put out showing the vast numbers of young who were affected. But I say to those people, wait a minute, didn't we take the jab because it was meant to protect our elderly? And now you're saying if they're old, they can die from the jab. That's okay. It's so cynical.
Well, our major excess deaths the last 2 years have been in the 50 to 64 year age group, and I'll declare an interest, which was more than twice the we had 6% excess deaths, but it was 12 and 13% excess in that age group. So, you know, we were told during the pandemic, you know, we've got to do all these things not to kill granny. And now that mum and dad are dying, no one cares.
Nope. I mean, there's one more ghastly point from all of this, Steve, that Andrew and I discussed in an earlier interview. Somebody picked it up in the UK in a little clip that went everywhere. Andrew, you may have seen it. Andrew, can you tell that story again? It was an anecdote from sitting in Parliament and somebody came up to you and said, you're jabbed now and you'll be gone. Could you tell that story again? Because
it was a cabinet minister. And I had ragged him the week before because he was eating porridge. And I said to him, "You, it's a good job you like porridge, because when this is over, you're all going to be doing a lot of porridge." And porridge in the UK is sort of a slang word for prison time. And he nearly spat his porridge out when I said that to him. And about a week later, he came up behind me in the tea room and just whispered in my ear, and he said, "You can speak out all you want to about the vaccines, but you're vaccinated, Andrew, and you're going to be dead of cancer soon." And he just walked off. And it wasn't meant as a joke. They know. Wow. They know what they've done.
Wow.
And do you both realise we had 11,000 vaccine exemptions? We cannot yet find out who was exempt, but it looks as if a lot of those people who were in government, a lot of our ministers, a lot of people in the Ministry of Health potentially, had exemptions, and yet they were telling us it was safe and effective. Why would they need to be exempt from taking the jabs?
In the UK, they made all these restrictions on people's freedoms and, social distancing and masks. And what we know is that all the people at the top of government in 10 Downing Street and those offices there, they weren't doing social distancing, they weren't masking. In fact, I've seen an email from a concerned civil servant in Number 10 who said, "Shouldn't we be wearing masks and socially distancing?" And the answer from another senior civil servant is, "Well, all the scientists say it doesn't work anyway." But please remember to socially distance and put your mask off when you go out the front door, because you could be filmed.
Yep.
This is crazy.
Speaking of masks, there's a book. It's called The Book on Masks. It is written by a dentist, and this thing is amazing.
What's it saying? What's the premise?
It basically says no. The everything that it just goes through every single excuse that they give, and just tears it apart in this. And I asked the author if he'd debate anyone, or anyone's asked him to debate the book. He said no.
But he's saying masks are a total waste of time. Is that what he said?
Of course.
Yeah. Well, Liz, I saw someone sent me an article from an Australian newspaper during the SARS pandemic, where the local government had taken drastic action because unscrupulous retailers were making claims that these paper masks were going to protect you from the virus. And they brought in a law that anyone making those claims and selling the masks was going to get fined $110,000 Australian dollars. And then it brought you forward to COVID-19, effectively the same virus, and you get fined for not wearing the mask.
Wow. Wow. What a change. And the science didn't change at all.
And the virus hadn't got any bigger, and the masks hadn't changed either.
Yep.
Well, the size of the virus, someone likened it for me to using a mask to try to stop a virus is like using a chain link fence to try to stop a mosquito getting through.
Yes.
A mask has no ability, as Steve's just pointed out to us. But these things will be trying to be brought in by the World Health Organization under the next pandemic treaty. Where are you at with that over in the UK, Andrew? What's happening there? Do you know if your government has signed?
Well, the only debates we've been able to get in the UK, which I've taken part in and given my speeches, but they were both public petition debates that received over 100,000 signatures from the UK voters. But interestingly, we had another one, I think, which got about 104,000 signatures. It qualified. And that motion to be debated was that the UK should leave the WHO. And the petitions committee ruled that we weren't going to have this debate, even though it had met the criteria for public debate. And I stood up in the chamber and wanted an explanation of how this could be, where they could just refuse to have this debate. They're running scared. I think the WHO know that there are too many of us making too many noises. And that's what I was supposed to be going to the They sprung it on me today. They want me to go to the Knesset and speak on Wednesday. I'm speaking in UK at a big event on Tuesday night. So I've asked them if I can deliver my evidence virtually to their health committee of why they should be very, very dubious of signing up to any of these WHO instruments. But I mean, this is the trap that they've set for humanity around the world. And it's going to be far easier not to get into the trap than to get out of it once we're in.
Remember, it was the WHO that was telling people to use ivermectin and early treatments and to stay out of the hospitals and to avoid remdesivir and avoid ventilators.
Steve Kirsch, have you ever directly challenged Bill Gates, who, of course, is the Gates Foundation, runs the World Health Organization?
He's just like everybody else, non-responsive when you try to challenge them.
Yeah. Let's move on, Steve, to what you've just challenged in terms of the myocarditis too. You talk about the British Heart Foundation in quite horrified terms, claiming that risk of myocarditis is far higher if you get the virus. What did you say to that on your tweet? Outline that for us.
I had someone who said that their cardiologist saw two cases of myocarditis in teenagers in a week. And a normal cardiologist will never see a case of myocarditis in a teenager.
Well, that was the world before the rollout of the vaccine, wasn't it? That was that world. They may never see a myocarditis case in their whole
career. Correct. And now so they would never see it in their career, and now they're seeing two in a week. Now, I said, okay, if the vaccines are preventing these cases and your risk after the vaccine is much lower, then there should be cardiologists who are seeing three myocarditis cases in a week before the vaccine rolled out. There is no such cardiologist in the entire world.
It's horrific what they've done to our young. It's horrific.
Well, I received information from a whistleblower in the British Heart Foundation working out of Oxford University that they were commissioned by Big Pharma to do a study to try and find a link between COVID-19 and heart disease and heart failure. And they didn't discover that. They discovered very early on, this was out in November, December 22, not in a paper, but I was told it, they discovered a link between the vaccines and heart disease, which obviously wasn't what their funders wanted.
And, right. So of course, the funders said, let's publish that, right?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. That's my point. The British Heart Foundation or the research unit, they made everyone sign non-disclosure agreements.
Wow. The data.
And I raised this in Parliament. And the British Heart Foundation initially said that it wasn't true, but then they had to admit that they do use non-disclosure agreements. But they said that's only to keep our research secret until it's been peer-reviewed. And they said that they were peer-reviewing a paper at the moment, but that was in December 22, and it's never come out.
It probably never will.
Probably never will.
So, but, I mean, so that we could keep people by their NDA, right?
Yeah.
Steve, you've gone from furious and debating anybody or offering debates or anyone to sort of bemused. And you're a man who's passionate about science. How are you coping with the denuding of science, of every good, solid scientific principle of a scientific study around the world? All these bodies that are willing to betray the truth. How are you coping with it? Has it just become amusing in a way? Sad.
It's sad. It's frustrating. It's so obvious. I'm looking at my post on X about, how come there's no cardiologist who's got three cases in a week happening during COVID? Because if you're having two afterwards, you must have cases like, people seeing three or four or five in a week from COVID. And so this guy posts saying, here's a study that refutes your contention. It's on the CDC website. It's like, yeah, all these studies show this, and the data is never available in any of these studies, and people just buy it up because it agrees with their belief system. And it's like, wow, okay, so you can't name a cardiologist, but you believe what the CDC says. You know, it's like with the vaccines. There are no success examples. I have not been able to locate a single clinic, a single medical practice anywhere in the world where the mortality dropped or morbidity dropped after the vaccine rolled out. Now, it should be the case that it's there in every clinic. And when I go on X and I say, hey, can you name a medical practice where the rates went down? And then everybody attacks me. You're a misinformation spreader. You're wrong. But nobody can name the clinic. Nobody can name the medical practice. How is that? How is that possible?
It's an exhausting crazy battle, Steve. Are you able to keep going even with those ghastly trolls who just try to lie their way through?
Oh, yeah. You know, I look at that as it's part of the process.
Mm. Do you think RFK will make this a central part of his campaign?
I think he will.
The lie of it. What about you, Andrew? Do you think politically this will become a real football in the election? The horrific betrayal. I mean, it's treason. There's no doubt that there's treasonous behavior by our New Zealand politicians betraying the people.
It's not just New Zealand politicians. And then I think back, obviously a long time before I was in Parliament, but the first act of Tony Blair's Labour government in 97, when they got into government, was to change the treason laws and take the death penalty out of treason laws. Thinking back now, I think they knew they were going to be committed, well, they were committing treason. I think it's been done to the people ever since. I would like to really thank Steve for coming over to my parliament with a group of experts and addressing RMPs with me on the vaccine home. So we had Ryan Cole over there, we had Pierre Corey, we had Robert Malone, and Steve Kirsch was there. And we had Peter McCullough on video, but that was sabotaged by the IT people. And following that, we had that 90-minute debate in Westminster Hall on the 16th of January. And we're going to get now hopefully a three-hour debate in the main chamber on the pandemic response and excess deaths on the 18th of April, straight more or less the first week back for Parliament from the Easter recess. And it's my debate. They may well cut the time short by using up loads of time for statements and urgent questions on that day. But because it's my debate, I will get to give my 30-minute speech, and they're going to have to. And it's going to be packed full of irrefutable facts and evidence. So Steve and all the experts that came over, we had Angus Dalgleish on the panel as well from the UK. I mean, that really has, you know, I've got 24, 25, 26 MPs now who are supporting debates on excess deaths. 18 months ago, I was on my own. That's a big difference.
Yep, and that's huge.
And there's huge political capital over here before the general election, because the opposition wanted more lockdowns, more mandates. So they've all their political capital is fully committed to, we did everything right for the people through the pandemic, our pandemic response. So nobody wants to talk about it before the general election. And now it looks like the general election is not going to be till probably October. I don't think they can keep a lid on it that long. Everybody knows someone who's died prematurely, and they think it's the vaccines.
So when you do that, promise me you will ask your fellow MPs to give you the name of a medical practice where the mortality and morbidity rates dropped after the vaccines were rolled out. I have yet to find such a medical practice. If what they were saying is true, then most of the medical practices would have such a stat. And yet, there is nothing to see here, folks. There's nothing to see.
I did force Rishi Sunak to admit, I tried to get him to correct his safe and effective statement about the vaccines from the dispatch box, and he modified it slightly by saying that they're unequivocally safe. Well, A, we know they're not. That was misleading Parliament and the country. But, I mean, if they were safe but not effective, why would you want to take an experimental treatment every few 6 months that was, even if it was safe, that's not effective? I mean, it's just
pointless. It's not effective. It's clearly not effective. None of these, I would venture to say that none of these vaccines, not for influenza, not for anything else, are effective, because we know the COVID vaccines had no effect and on hospitalization and mortality. And we know that the flu vaccines also had zero effect on hospitalization. Now, if they're fooling us on the flu vaccines and the COVID vaccines, what do you think the odds are that they're fooling us on the other stuff as well? I mean, the medical community should be ashamed of what they're doing here, because it's so obvious to anybody who looks at the data. And I cannot get a debate with any of these people on video, you know, or on the record where we can record it. I mean, like, I could offer these people $100,000 and no one would debate me.
It's happened in our parliament before. I mean, in the US, you dodged thalidomide in the late 50s and early 60s. But it was withdrawn in the UK, Europe, and Australia in 61 for its side effects. But it was 1972 until the word thalidomide could be mentioned in the chamber of the House of Commons. By that time, the children who hadn't already died or were stillborn, I mean, those so badly affected, they would have been 11 and 12 years old. The Strasbourg courts had ruled, and I looked at the ruling, three judges ruled that successive speakers of the House of Commons, and it wouldn't just have been them, it would have been the whip's offices as well, had deliberately suppressed all debate for 11 years on thalidomide. So it's all happened before. It's all happened before.
Because I knew that thalidomide took 5 years of babies being born with tiny wings for arms and no legs, 5 years before the public woke up and said, hey, this might link back to that rollout of thalidomide. So I was thinking the five-year mark for the COVID jab, maybe enough public will go, we are not happy with what's gone on. But I didn't know it was actively...
It was 16 years for thalidomide. I have a letter that was written because, obviously, in 61, Franco was in power in Spain. There was no MPs to ask the difficult questions. And a letter from Chemie Grünenthal in Germany, where the head office was, who made thalidomide, to their office in Madrid. It's in Spanish, but if you translate it, it basically says, we're withdrawing the drug in the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, but if you don't choose to tell the Spanish doctors, we'll stand by you. And they didn't withdraw it. They knew exactly what it was doing, and they didn't withdraw it in Spain. They put profit before people again. I mean, they're appalling. And nobody went to prison. Nobody was criminally charged for thalidomide anywhere in the world.
I don't think that will happen this time. I think the calls are mounting for these people to be held up to the world as criminals, and there will be many of them. What are your predictions, both of you? Where does this nightmare... It's like a bad movie. I would have walked out hours ago if I could have. I just want this movie to stop. But what are your predictions for where this will go? Let's start with you, Steve Kirsch.
I think in 2024, this is going to be exposed. And, you know, we were just talking about thalidomide and birth defects. You know that having the mother vaccinated, whether your mother was vaccinated during pregnancy, is the number one determinant of whether or not you're going to have a birth defect. Over 75% of the birth defects are because mothers were vaccinated during pregnancy. And, you know... And the other fact, probably the more important fact, is that the number one cause of chronic disease in the world is the vaccine programs. And in America, the numbers are such that 2/3 of the chronic diseases are caused by the vaccines. If we stopped vaccinating people, we would eliminate 2/3 of the problem. So, and some of these chronic diseases are things like autism, which doesn't go away. So I think this is going to come out. You know, and Bobby Kennedy's been talking about this for a long time, that the vaccine programs are the cause of the chronic disease in the world. He's absolutely right. There's no doubt about it. The numbers are so clear. And he's running for president. If he wins, people's opinions will suddenly change, because the experts will suddenly change their opinions because there'll be new experts in town. And, you know, it's like every expert on autism, all the top experts on autism know that it's caused by the vaccine. And they're all afraid to come out and say it because they don't want their funding to dry up, and they don't want to be shamed out of their practice and have their medical licenses taken away. So they all sit in silence. Autism's been around for over 20 years. Some people found out early, some people found out late, but they're all keeping their mouth shut because, as one of the top researchers said, we all know vaccines cause autism, but we just can't talk about it. So I think this is going to change in the next 12 months, within less than 12 months from now. So that's my prediction. I think that the cat will be out of the bag. The evidence is too compelling. You know, I just completed the survey. I surveyed 10,000 people. It took me less than 24 hours to do that. I had equal numbers of vaccinated, highly vaccinated, and equal numbers of unvaccinated people in my survey. So I can compute odds ratios, and I can compute p-values, and I can compute confidence intervals. And you know what? There is no doubt at all. I looked at over 60 conditions, and some of them were positive and negative controls so that I could validate the survey. The result was that in over 51 of those, I had a statistically significant effect size caused by the vaccines. In other words, the vaccines are the number one cause of over 51 conditions of the 60 that I asked about.
Wow.
That's extraordinary. You can't, but here's the thing, that anybody can replicate this in less than 24 hours. Now, they may not be able to replicate it with the same p-values that I've got, just because they may not be able to get the numbers. But anybody can replicate the directionality in 24 hours. The New York Times could do this in a heartbeat. And yet, nobody does it. The NIH doesn't do it. The U.S. government doesn't do it. The New York Times doesn't do it. The Washington Post doesn't do it. You know, CNN's not going to do it. 60 Minutes is not going to do it. All of these people are hiding from the truth that is available to them in plain sight. But Rasmussen Reports, a little polling company in the United States that's well-respected, and they have excellent, you know, in terms of the rankings of the pollsters and accuracy of their polls, they're at the top of the list. They're going to do my poll.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And then we'll see when the finger pointing begins, because it's all a question of when the finger pointing begins, because once it's out, then everybody in Parliament suddenly says, oh, you're right, but it wasn't my fault. It was those people at the ONS that were not telling us. And people will jump on this, and the ONS will be blaming the medical community, and the medical community will be, you know, I mean, the whole thing will be, we agree, but it's someone else's fault. I can't wait for that day.
The ONS will be saying that they were, it was that Andrew Bridgen MP and Steve Kirsch. They kept sending us too many letters that were distracting us.
Yeah, there you go.
That we weren't answering.
My fault. Yeah. You still haven't heard back from our friend, right?
No. Ian, I haven't.
Professor Ian Diamond.
Ian Diamond, yes.
Tell us about that reference. What's that reference? Tell the people.
We asked him for a little bit more detail on his time series cohort analysis. We said, hey, instead of maybe three buckets, how about doing a bucket for every, you know, week or even months since the vaccine rolled out, but weeks are better. And the answer was, I'm not going to give you an answer on that.
Just didn't come back to the letter I sent him.
It's like you send me a letter from what 20, like in this case, it was what eight members, was it 12? What were the numbers? How many members?
Six or eight members.
Okay. Eight members of parliament. It's like, you can't get me to respond. I'm not going to even answer you.
Steve, 7 weeks ago, I wrote to the top policeman in the country at the Mets, Mark Rowley, and asked for a meeting so that myself and 15 experts could give evidence about the crimes that have been committed during the lockdowns and the vaccine rollout. And I've sent two chasers. I'm going to send another one next week. And won't even acknowledge the letter. I wouldn't mind, but his office is right next door to Parliament. It's just, I could walk there in 3 minutes from my office.
See, that actually makes me feel good because I don't get any of my questions answered either. You know, like I call up the media relations for Santa Clara County Department of Public Health, and I've got a FOIA request that was answered showing that 98% of the people in Santa Clara County were vaccinated who were infected with COVID. But the vaccination rate at the time was only 85%. I'm just asking them, can you explain this? Because it sure looks like the vaccine makes things worse. And the answer was, no, we're not going to talk to you. We're not going to explain it because we can't. So we're just going to say nothing. This is insane.
I think there's a lot of our letters sitting on people's desks and they're not. No one wants to look at them. They just sit there, don't they? If we don't look at it, it's not there.
Yep.
I think Steve's absolutely right. When they threw me out of the Conservative Party just before, they told me that they wanted to cover the vaccine harms up for 20 years before anyone wanted to talk about it. I said that was unacceptable. I'm with Steve. I think it's going to come out later this year. I don't know when, but I think it's next six, eight months. I don't think they're going to get 20 months from last January, not let alone 20 years. And there's crimes against humanity. It's the biggest, I can imagine, this is the biggest crime against humanity we've ever seen. There's going to be a breakdown of trust in the public, in the medical fraternity, science, and politics, quite rightly. And it's going to take very severe penalties. Punishments being meted out to those who've let this go on, so those who've thought the plan up, those who've gone along with it, those who've colluded with it, those who've covered up for it, because otherwise we're never going to get public belief back in any of these institutions, quite rightly. And also we've got to persuade people in the future who take on positions of responsibility, whether that's in science, medicine, or in politics, if you ever think about doing anything like this ever again, you're going to really be hammered. There's going to be very, very severe punishments because otherwise, why wouldn't they do it again? This can never happen again. We're going to have to change our democratic system, Liz. We've got to go to direct democracy where Parliament has a lot less power and we put every piece of legislation of any importance in a referendum to the people along the lines of the Swiss model. And that's the best way of making sure that the things like this can't happen again. We've also got to have a lot of devolution of local services so there's no centralised power that can ever take control in such a negative way over healthcare and other aspects of local government.
I agree with you entirely. And I stood in the last election in New Zealand. Many people come up to me on most days and say, I think we were cheated of votes, but There's no point pursuing that when Trump's not getting anywhere. But the point of it was I wanted to get in to send from that central governance model we have in New Zealand that's so corrupt, send power back to the provinces, to the regions, to the boroughs, to make sure the people have power. The second string, though, for both of you, I believe, for any democracy to survive, let alone flourish, is we must have what we're doing here, open discussion of anything. Anything goes, as long as it can be openly, respectfully discussed in the public square, which is what we could use social media and the remnants of our MSN for. We could have open discussion, and these politicians and these corrupt pharmaceutical corporate people could never get away with this again.
Yeah.
What do you say?
And but open data and data transparency is a big part of it. If these guys aren't hiding anything, then how come they're not inviting us, all of us misinformation spreaders, to come to a room and do queries on their database?
Yes. What about the release of the control level data? Why don't they release the control level data that every government's holding?
Yeah, even better is just put us in a room. They control the what goes in and what goes out. We do the queries, and we do as many queries as we want. If there's nothing to hide, if the vaccines are so safe and effective, then they're not inviting. Why are they not inviting us to query their databases? The opposite occurs when people do get access and they find something, their database access is cut off. This is how it works in the United States.
Look at Barry Young. Look at Barry Young in New Zealand.
It's insane.
Barry is an absolute New Zealand hero. They've gone after him. They went after me with an injunction. Steve, they went after you in America with an injunction. What was your reaction to the New Zealand Ministry of Health trying to sling you up with an injunction?
I wrote them back and I said, hey, happy to take it down. Let's have a Zoom call about it where we can negotiate the terms. And you hear nothing. And then they have these, they went to the newspapers and they said, oh, this guy's revealing confidential data. And I said to the lawyers who are trying to get my stuff taken down, hey, no problem. Just identify which pieces of confidential information I should take down. And there's no answer.
There has been no
They don't even respond. I mean, I could be calling these guys every single day and they will not, they totally ignore me. They want me to take the stuff down. And I say, okay, great. I'm happy to take it down. Just tell me which records to remove. And then there's silence. It's so corrupt.
Not one name from the Ministry of Health data from Barry Young. Not one name has been revealed, Andrew. And this is a Ministry of Health that forced all New Zealanders to reveal our health information in the mandates. Everywhere we went in this country, we had to let people know our medical status. I'm jabbed or I'm not jabbed. They didn't give a damn about our privacy. Now they weep openly about privacy. It would be funny if it wasn't so dark. It is so dark. But for them to try to put an injunction across Steve, who's in a completely different legal jurisdiction, I mean, what were their lawyers even thinking, Steve? It's ludicrous.
Oh, no, it worked. Wasabi got the letter and closed my account. They took down my server. I sent them an email saying, oh, we're investigating the matter. And they never even talked to me to get my side of the story. They basically closed my account and took all my data. That's Wasabi for you.
Well, I can tell you this. Westpac is a bank here, and it's a government. It's the government's bank as well. We had our account with Westpac. And a little guy in Westpac simply closed our account because I'm putting out this material. And this all came from the weekend that Barry Young was arrested. So the government tries its dirty tricks. It fails now, I believe, at every step. Don't you think, Andrew, these corrupt governments are scared? They're on the run and they're exposing themselves with every bit of attempted fascism or tyranny that they try. That's what I feel. We just have to keep going.
We have to keep going. They are scared, but they are getting desperate. In Scotland today, legislation came into force on the 1st of April, April Fool's Day, but it is that actually makes hate speech laws, which means you can be criminally prosecuted for words you've said in your own house in private.
That is coming from Jacinda.
Gotta watch what you say in private now, don't you?
Let alone on a platform like this. I mean, you just throw away the key. So, but that is so far beyond the pale that, I mean, thousands and thousands of people are kicking off in Scotland over this, and it's the shape of things to come. We've got to fight it in Scotland. There's been a big, huge protest up there today outside the Scottish Parliament, and this is where they're taking it. But the more they push this agenda, the more it's waking people up, and we're rapidly getting to the time where people have got to stand up. And if we're not doing it for ourselves, we've got to do it for the next generations and the children, because they're going to have no future in any of our societies if any of this comes to pass.
Well, we'll close it there. That hate speech law is that directly links back to Christchurch, where there was an event that happened in a few years before the COVID-19 rollout, and Jacinda Ardern put this around the world under the name the Christchurch Call. She now has a position, Steve Kirsch, in Harvard, which is all about suppressing free speech. And in a recent survey, Harvard was noted as the university, the college over there, that had the least free speech. It is so sad. And this is from this corrupted little country of New Zealand with these corrupted politicians polluting the world. We're so ashamed of Jacinda Ardern going out in the world with that. However, talking to you both, I think it will still give a lot of people hope around the world. And the key is we all must stand together. It can't just rest on the shoulders of you two leaders or any of us trying to get free media out. It's all of us now. Final word from you, Steve Kirsch, to the people of the world who are watching this.
Yeah. I guess the summary is don't take any vaccines at all. Don't give your kids any vaccines. Don't trust the authorities. And you should look at the data yourself for anything where there's controversy. And especially anytime that anybody uses censorship, those people using censorship are always on the wrong side of the issue. No exceptions in history. So it's really easy to determine whether the public health authorities are telling the truth, whether the White House is telling the truth, whether the UK government is telling the truth. It's really easy. If they're using censorship, they're not telling you the truth.
Beautifully said, Andrew. Your final words.
Well, I predicted before Christmas that things were going to be changing this year, but we're going to be all in for a bumpy ride. As the globalists, they are realizing they're losing their grip, because people are waking up around the world. They're not going to release the power they've got either easily or lightly. It's going to be bumpy for us. But when it's over, and I promise your listeners, it is going to be over one day. We're going to end this, and we're going to win, and then we are going to build a much fairer, meritocratic, more honest, less corrupt society than we've had before. And that won't be difficult, I promise you.
Well, two things on that. I want everybody, please, if you can, give Andrew Bridgen some funds from around the world so he can win this battle in the courts against Matt Hancock, the very corrupted Matt Hancock there. And to have both of you on together to see the building bridge of friendship from the UK to the US via you two is going to give a lot of people heart here. Thank you both for speaking today. And we'll go out on Tucker Carlson's introduction, Steve, to your recent interview with him, which was excellent. I recommend everyone watch that as well. Thank you both.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
The lies we were told about the COVID vax were so grotesque and so overwhelming that it's almost hard to watch them just 2 years later. But we should, because the people who told them are still effectively in charge. Here's one. It's from 2021. This is CDC Director Rochelle Walensky telling us, informing us, that anyone who takes the vax and then somehow manages to get infected, but that would never happen. But if it did happen, that person would not be able to spread the virus to anyone else. We promise. Watch.
Can you, if you were to get infection with and vaccinated, could you give it to somebody else? Were you silently able to spread it? Those data were not covered in the clinical trials, but now data have emerged again that have demonstrated that even if you were to get infected during post-vaccination, that you can't give it to anyone else.
Why hasn't she been charged with a crime? Well, she never will be. And of course, just a few years later, it turns out the whole thing was a disaster of world historic proportions. Books will be written about this at some point when we can tell the truth about it. A lot of people were killed or permanently disabled by it. How many is the question? How many people were hurt by the vax? How many people were killed by the vax that was mandatory? Well, we just spoke to Brett Weinstein on this show, Professor Brett Weinstein. He told us he's seen research that up to 17 million people across the globe may have died from it. Watch.
I was recently at a conference in Romania on the COVID crisis. And so there was a lot of work trying to unpack what we actually understand. And I saw a credible estimate of something like 17 million deaths globally from this technology. So
17 million deaths from the COVID vax?
Well, when you know, when you scale up to billions, it's not hard to reach a number like that with a technology this dangerous. Now, to your deeper question, I think let's steel man.
So just for perspective, I mean, that's like the death toll of a global war.
Yes, absolutely. This is a great tragedy of history. So that proportion.
17 million globally. Now, that's an estimate. And the interesting and most shocking fact, actually, is that we don't really know because no one seems to be keeping track, at least in this country, which is amazing considering what our government keeps track of. The Biden administration knows exactly how many transgender heart surgeons there are, how many bisexual Samoan airline pilots. They keep track of it with Nazi-like precision. But how many people were killed or disabled by the COVID vax? They don't care, so they're not keeping track of those numbers. So it falls to people who don't work for the U.S. government. And one of them is a man called Steve Kirsch, who is a MIT-trained inventor, by the way, a longtime donor to the Democratic Party, not a lifelong right-wing extremist or anything, a businessman. But he has now dedicated his time and his ample energy to figuring out exactly what the COVID vax did to this country and the world. He's the founder of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund. Steve Kirsch joins us now. Steve, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Tucker. It's great to be here.